Next heading, win-win performance agreements. Creating win-win performance agreements require vital paradigm shifts. You see, the focus is on results, not methods. Most of us tend to supervise methods. We use the gopher delegation discussed in Habit 3, the methods management I used with Sandra when I asked her to take pictures of our son as he was water skiing. But win-win agreements focus on results, releasing tremendous individual human potential and creating greater synergy, building PC in the process instead of focusing exclusively on P. With win-win accountability, people evaluate themselves. The traditional evaluation games people play are awkward and emotionally exhausting. In win-win, people evaluate themselves using the criteria that they themselves helped to create up front. And if you set it up correctly, people can do that. With a win-win delegation agreement, even a 7-year-old boy can tell for himself how well he's keeping the yard green and clean. My best experiences in teaching university classes have come when I have created a win-win shared understanding of the goal up front. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Here are the basic requirements for an A, B, or C grade. My goal is to help every one of you get an A. Now you take what we've talked about and analyze it and come up with your own understanding of what you want to accomplish that is unique to you. Then let's get together and agree on the grade you want and what you plan to do to get it. Management philosopher and consultant Peter Drucker recommends the use of a manager's letter to capture the essence of performance agreements between managers and their employees. Following a deep and thorough discussion of expectations, guidelines, and resources to make sure that they are in harmony with organizational goals, the employee writes a letter to the manager that summarizes the discussion and indicates when the next performance plan or review discussion will take place. Developing such a win-win performance agreement is the central activity of management. With an agreement in place, employees can manage themselves within the framework of that agreement. The manager then can serve like a pace car in a race. He can get things going and then get out of the way. His job from then on is to remove oil spills. When a boss becomes the first assistant to each of his subordinates, he can greatly increase his span of control. Entire levels of administration and overhead can be eliminated. Instead of supervising 6 or 8, such a manager can supervise 20, 30, 50 or more. In win-win performance agreements, consequences become the natural or logical result of performance, rather than a reward or punishment arbitrarily handed out by the person in charge. There are basically 4 kinds of consequences, or rewards and penalties, that management or parents can control: financial, psychic, opportunity, and responsibility. Financial consequences include such things as income, stock options, allowances, or penalties. Psychic or psychological consequences include recognition, approval, respect, credibility, or the loss of them. Unless people are in a survival mode, psychic compensation is often more motivating than financial compensation. Opportunity includes training, development, perks, and other benefits. Responsibility has to do with scope and authority, either of which can be enlarged or diminished. Win-win agreements specify consequences in one or more of these areas, and the people involved know it up front. So you don't play games. Everything is clear from the beginning. In addition to these logical, personal consequences, it is also important to clearly identify what the natural organizational consequences are. For example, what will happen if I'm late to work? If I refuse to cooperate with others? If I don't develop good win-win performance agreements with my subordinates? If I don't hold them accountable for desired results? And if I don't promote their professional growth and career development? When my daughter turned 16, we set up a win-win agreement regarding the use of the family car. We agreed that she would obey the laws of the land and that she would keep the car clean and properly maintained. We agreed that she would use the car only for responsible purposes and would serve as a cab driver for her mother and me within reason. We also agree that she would do all her other jobs cheerfully without being reminded. These were our wins. We also agreed that I would provide some resources, the car, gas, and insurance. And we agreed that she would meet weekly with me, usually on Sunday afternoon, to evaluate how she was doing based on our agreement. The consequences were clear. As long as she kept her part of the agreement, she could use the car. If she didn't keep it, she would lose the privilege until she decided to. This win-win agreement set up clear expectations from the beginning on both our parts. It was a win for her. She got to use the car. And it was certainly a win for Sandra and me. Now she could handle her own transportation needs and even some of ours. We didn't have to worry about maintaining the car or keeping it clean. And we had built-in accountability, which meant I didn't have to hover over her or manage her methods. Her integrity, her conscience, her power of discernment, and her high emotional bank account managed her infinitely better. We didn't have to get emotionally strung out, trying to supervise her every move, and coming up with punishments or rewards on the spot if she didn't do things the way we thought she should. We had a win-win agreement, and it liberated us all. Win-win agreements are like that. They're tremendously liberating. But as the product of isolated techniques, they won't hold up. Even if you set them up in the beginning, there is no way to maintain them without personal integrity and a relationship of trust. A true win-win agreement is the product of the paradigm, the character, and the relationship out of which it grows. In that context, it defines and directs the interdependent interaction for which it was created. We have now discussed the first three dimensions of win-win: character, relationships, agreements. Now we will move to the fourth, systems. Win-win can only survive in an organization when the systems support it. If you talk win-win but reward win-lose, you've got a losing program on your hands. You basically get what you reward. If you want to achieve the goals and reflect the values in your mission statement, then you need to align the reward system with those goals and values. If it isn't aligned systemically, you won't be walking your talk. You'll be in the situation of the manager I mentioned earlier, who taught cooperation but practiced competition by creating a race to Bermuda contest. I worked for several years with a very large real estate organization in the Middle West. My first experience with this organization was at a large sales rally where over 800 sales associates gathered for the annual reward program. It was a psych-up cheerleading session, complete with high school bands and a great deal of frenzied screaming. Out of the 800 people there, about 40 received awards for top performance, such as most sales, greatest volume, highest earned commissions, and most listings. There was a lot of hoopla, excitement, cheering, applause around the presentation of these awards. There was no doubt that those 40 people had won. But there was also the underlying awareness that 760 people had lost. We immediately began educational and organizational development work to align the systems and structures of the organization toward the win-win paradigm. We involved people at a grassroots level to develop the kinds of systems that would motivate them. We also encouraged them to cooperate and synergize with each other, so that as many as possible could achieve the desired results of their individually tailored performance agreements. At the next rally, 1 year later, there were over 1,000 sales associates present, and about 800 of them received awards. There were a few individual winners based on comparisons, but the program primarily focused on people achieving self-selected performance objectives and on groups achieving team objectives. There was no need to bring in the high school bands to artificially contrive the fanfare, the cheerleading, and the psych-up. There was tremendous natural interest and excitement because people could share in each other's happiness, and teams of sales associates could experience rewards together, including a vacation trip for the entire office. The remarkable thing was that almost all of the 800 who received the awards that year had produced as much per person in terms of volume and profit as the previous year's 40. The spirit of win-win had significantly increased the number of golden eggs and had fed the goose as well, releasing enormous human energy and talent. The resulting synergy was astounding to almost everyone involved. Competition has its place in the marketplace, or against last year's performance, perhaps even against another office or individual where there is no particular interdependence, no need to cooperate. But cooperation in the workplace is as important to free enterprise as competition in the marketplace. The spirit of win-win cannot survive in an environment of competition and contests. For win-win to work, the systems have to support it. The training system, the planning system, the communication system, the budgeting system, the information system, the recruiting system, the compensation system, all have to be based on the principle of win-win. I did some consulting for another company that wanted training for their people in human relations. The underlying assumption was that the problem was the people. The president said, "Go into any store you want and see how they treat you. They're just order takers. They don't understand how to get close to the customers, they don't know the product, and they don't have the knowledge and the skill and the sales process necessary to create a marriage between the product and the need." So I went into the various stores, and he was right. But that still didn't answer the question in my mind. What caused this attitude, this culture? "Look, we're on top of the problem," the president said. "We have department heads out there setting a great example. We've told them their job is 2/3 selling and 1/3 management. So they're out selling everybody. We just want you to provide some training for the salespeople." Those words raised a red flag. "Let's get some more data," I said. He didn't like that. He knew what the problem was, and he wanted to get on with training. But I persisted, and within 2 days we uncovered the real problem. Because of the job definition and the compensation system, the managers were creaming. They'd stand behind the cash register and cream all of the business during slow times. And half the time in retail is slow, and the other half is frantic. So the managers would give all the dirty jobs, inventory control, stock work, and cleaning to the salespeople. And they would stand behind the cash registers and cream. That's why the department heads were tops in sales. So all we did is change one system, the compensation system, and the problem was corrected almost overnight. We set up a system whereby the managers only made money when their salespeople made money. We overlapped the needs and goals of the managers with the needs and goals of the salespeople. Win-win. And the need for human relations training suddenly disappeared. The key was in developing a true win-win reward system. In another instance, I worked with a manager in a company that required formal performance evaluations. He was frustrated over the evaluation rating he had given a particular manager. "He deserved a 3, he said, "but I had to give him a 1, which meant superior and promotable." "Well, then why did you give him a 1? "He gets the numbers," was his reply. "So why do you think he deserves a 3? "It's the way he gets them. He neglects people. He runs over them. He's a troublemaker." I responded, "It sounds like he's totally focused on P, on production. And that's what he's being rewarded for. But what would happen if you talked with him about the problem and you helped him understand the importance of PC? He said he had done so, but no effect. "Then what if you were to set up a win-win contract with him where you both agreed that 2/3 of his compensation would come from P, from the numbers, and the other 1/3 would come from PC? How other people perceive him. What kind of a leader, people builder, team builder he is." "Now that would get his attention," he replied. So often the problem is in the system, not in the people. If you put good people in bad systems, you get bad results. You have to water the flowers you want to grow. As people really learn to think win-win, They can set up the systems to create and reinforce it. They can transform unnecessarily competitive situations to cooperative ones, and can powerfully impact their effectiveness by building both P and PC. In business, executives can align their systems to create teams of highly productive people working together to compete against external standards of performance. In education, teachers can set up grading systems based on an individual's performance in the context of agreed-upon criteria, and can encourage students to cooperate in productive ways to help each other learn and achieve. In families, parents can shift the focus from competition with each other to cooperation. In activities such as bowling, for example, they can keep a family score and try to beat a previous one. They can set up home responsibilities with win-win agreements that eliminate constant nagging and enable parents to do the things only they can do. A friend once shared with me a cartoon he'd seen of two children talking to each other. "If Mommy doesn't get us up soon," one was saying, "we're going to be late for school." These words brought forcibly to his attention the nature of the problems created when families are not organized on a responsible win-win basis. Win-win puts the responsibility on the individual for accomplishing specific results within clear guidelines and available resources. It makes a person accountable to perform and evaluate the results, and provides consequences as a natural result of performance. And win-win systems create the environment which support and reinforces the win-win performance agreements. The fifth dimension of win-win is processes. You see, there is no way to achieve win-win ends with win-lose or lose-win means. The ends and the means are inseparable. You can't say you're going to think win-win whether you like it or not. So the question becomes how to arrive at a win-win solution. Roger Williams and William Ury, two Harvard Law professors, have done some outstanding work in which they call the principled approach versus the positional approach to bargaining in their tremendously useful and insightful book, Getting to Yes. Although the words win-win are not used, the spirit and underlying philosophy of the book are in harmony with the win-win approach. They suggest that the essence of principled negotiation is to separate the person from the problem, to focus on interests and not on positions, to invent options for mutual gain, and to insist on objective criteria, some external standard or principle that both parties can buy into. In my own work with various people and organizations seeking win-win solutions, I suggest that they become involved in the following four-step process. First, see the problem from the other point of view. Really seek to understand and to give expression to the needs and concerns of the other party as well as or better than they can themselves. Second, identify the key issues and concerns, not positions, but the key issues and concerns that are involved. Third, determine what results would constitute a fully acceptable solution. And fourth, identify possible new options to achieve those results. Habits 5 and 6 deal directly with two of the elements of this process, and we will go into those in depth in the next two chapters. But at this juncture, let me point out the highly interrelated nature of the process of win-win with the essence of win-win itself. You can only achieve win-win solutions with win-win processes. The ends and the means are the same. They are inseparable. In fact, the ends pre-exist in the means. Win-win is not a personality technique. It's a total paradigm of human interaction. It comes from a character of integrity, maturity, and the abundance mentality. It grows out of high trust relationships. It is embodied in agreements that effectively clarify and manage expectations as well as accomplishment. It thrives in supportive systems, and it is achieved through the process we are now prepared to more fully examine in Habits 5 and 6. Before we move on to those habits, think about the following application suggestions for Habit 4, Think Win-Win. 1. Think about an upcoming interaction wherein you will be attempting to reach an agreement or negotiate a solution. Commit to maintain a balance between courage and consideration. 2. Make a list of obstacles that keep you from applying the win-win paradigm more frequently. Determine what could be done within your circle of influence to eliminate some of those obstacles. 3. Select a specific relationship where you would like to develop a win-win agreement. Try to put yourself into the other person's place and write down explicitly how you think that person sees the solution. Then list from your own perspective what results would constitute a win for you. Approach the other person and ask if he or she would be willing to communicate until you reach a point of agreement and mutually beneficial solution. 4. Identify 3 key relationships in your life. Give some indication of what you feel the balance is in each of the emotional bank accounts. Write down some specific ways you could make deposits in each account. 5. Deeply consider your own scripting. Is it win-lose? How does that scripting affect your interactions with other people? Can you identify the main source of that script? Determine whether or not those scripts serve well in your current reality. 6. Try to identify a model of win-win thinking who, even in hard situations, really seeks mutual benefit. Determine now to more closely watch and learn from this person's example.